The Feast of Tabernacles is the wedding feast. It is the purpose of time and space. But it doesn't have anything to do with what the world thinks a wedding is. The celebration of the Feast of Tabernacles is the celebration of the end of you controlling your own life. It's when you're able to place total control of every aspect of your life into the hands of the Father. Then comes the renewal of your mind. You make the cross of Christ of none effect by your desire to control instead of abandoning yourself. And that's what this celebration is all about. This is the party to end all parties. The feast is the reason time and space exists. 30% of the Gospels are about Christ and his activities attendant to the Feast of Tabernacles. You will not understand anything he's talking about unless you first understand this feast. The feast lasts for 8 days. The first 7 days signify your time in linear time. The 8th day is the feast by which you leave time. During the time that they lived in the booths, during that time, Israel lived in booths outside to show that they were pilgrims, that this earth wasn't their home. Then on the evening of the 7th day, the booths were burned, and they marched around the base of the altar with the paradise apple or the pomegranate. The priests smashed the fruit as they marched around the temple, the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil. They smashed it at the base of the altar so that they could enter into the 8th day. You must be in a state of no self-awareness. During each of the evenings, the priests also pour the water and the wine into the base of the altar to signify why time and space exists. Water represents the human race that is turned into the wine of the bride. There is a ceremony of lighting the lights with the garments of the priests, the idea being that the light is so bright that all is exposed, nothing is left hidden. And we are naked but unashamed in the spirit. That's what's needed to enter the 8th day. Everyone is invited to the parties during the 7 nights, the lame, the poor, the homeless, even the Levite. On the 8th day, however, the door closes, and it is only the bride that is invited to enter the dinner party. Well, that's a nutshell what this Feast of Tabernacles is about. Let's go to Matthew 22.
A good book, one I recommend.
How old were you when you wrote this book?
Oh, I was pretty young.
You have all my little Twinkies in Washington. Hey, Mom.
What? 22.
22. Matthew 22, verse 1. And Jesus answered and spake unto them again by parables, and said, The kingdom of heaven, and this parable is he's talking about this feast, the Feast of Tabernacles, and its relationship to the kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is like unto a certain king which made a marriage for his son, and sent forth his servants to call them that were bidden to the wedding, and they would not come. And again he sent forth other servants, saying, Tell them which are bidden, Behold, I have prepared my dinner, my oxen and my fatlings are killed, and all things are ready, come unto the marriage. But they made light of it, and went their ways, one to his farm, another to his merchandise. And the remnant took his servants, and entreated them spitefully, and slew them. And when the king heard thereof, he was wroth, and he sent forth his armies, and destroyed those murderers, and burned up their city. That's first was to Israel. You understand? They were all invited. Then he said to his servants, The wedding is ready, but they which were bidden were not worthy. Go therefore into the highways, and as many as you shall find, bid to the marriage. So those servants went out into the highways and gathered together all as many as they found, both bad and good. And the wedding was furnished with guests. And when the king came in to see the guests, and this is the moment of the 8th day, the beginning of the 8th day, the king comes to see the guests. When the king came in to see the guests, he saw there a man which had not on a wedding garment. And he saith unto him, Friend, how camest thou in hither, not having a wedding garment? And he was speechless. Then said the king to the servants, Bind him hand and foot, and take him away, and cast him into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth, for many are called, but few are chosen. The man was speechless when the king, when God said, you don't have the right garment on. He had no idea what he was talking about because he'd been walking his whole life assuming that he had the right garment on. Now, that's the ticket. That's the issue that this feast, this year, is about, is the garment. And how do you know that the garment is the right garment? Do you have on the right garment? Now, God has a very simple way to see whether or not you have on the right garment. Go to Romans 14. Verse 22. Romans 14, verse 22. Hast thou faith? Have it to thyself before God. Happy is he that condemneth not himself in the thing which he alloweth. Now, a better translation is approve. Another translation is the thing that he does. Hear me. Happy is the man who condemneth not himself and the thing which he does, or the thing which he alloweth. That's the rarest state of being there is in the universe for the human race. That you would no longer condemn yourself in the thing which you approve, or the thing which you allow. Now, the reason that's so important is the next verse. And he that doubteth is damned if he eat, because... You notice he eateth is in italics. It means it's not in the scriptures. Because it's not of faith. For whatsoever is not of faith is sin. If you doubt, you're damned. What is doubt? The act of, the word here in the Greek doesn't mean the act of having a doubt, believe it or not. It means the act of proceeding when there is doubt.
Not means eating, not a body.
It means eating it, see?
Eating
anything. You remember when Adam and Eve... This is what, from now until we enter the feast, this is what we're going to study. It's the difference between touching something and eating something.
Don't you know there was doubt?
Huh?
Don't you know there was doubt?
Touching versus, oh yeah, touching versus eating. When you take action... In spite of doubt, when you force yourself, what you are doing is forcing yourself to eat. You understand? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. You've done it a million times. You've done it in relationships. You've done it with dates. You've done it in the way you've treated your parents. You've done it the way you've treated everybody today. You reached a point in time in which there was some hesitation within you, and you ignored the hesitation and proceeded. That spiritually is called eating. If you eat in the state of doubt, you're damned. Now, what's the alternative? The alternative is to wait in a state of doubt. Okay? Now, that's the, as Harry has indicated, that's the true meaning of fasting. Now, this, what this has to do with the garment is that any time that you eat or proceed with a state of doubt, then what happens is the garment is spotted by the flesh. In other words, you are in a position where you are establishing your own rightness and concerned with it because you'll justify your actions as opposed to trusting in the rightness of Christ. You can only trust in the rightness of Christ by being in the state of never, ever, ever, ever making a choice. Now, the ancient rabbis, I started to tell you about Rabbi Akiba and what all this has to do with the Feast of Tabernacles. From the time of Ezra, which was 400 B.C., that's when the writing of the Talmud started, and the writing of the Midrash. And those that were able to write down words became what is called the Tanaim in the Hebrew. It means they were the ones that brought original revelation based on the Torah into being. Do you understand that? There were only a few. They only lasted until about the time of Christ. Then there were, from then on, there were people who interpreted what the Tanaim said, and they were called the Amorim. You understand that? Okay, Rabbi Akiba was one of the Tanaim. That means he had original revelation, and all the Jews have done since then is try to interpret what the hell he said based on the Torah. Now, I believe in spirit, we are entering into a new generation of Tanaim. I believe that within this room there are Tanaim, those that will have original revelation. Now, Akiba said this incredible thing. He said the reason that Israel celebrated the Feast of Booths was to show how they are guided by God by the cloud in the wilderness. Now, that was an incredible thing for a rabbi to say back then. Because what he is saying now is, what we are saying to you is that cloud is your doubt. Now, it's hard to hear what I'm going to say to you tonight, because most of you have never done anything other than operate in doubt. You've eaten totally unworthily. You've never experienced a state of being in which there was no doubt, because you continually moved ahead of or over the doubt, constantly trying to force yourself into a state of understanding, into a state of peace, into a state of anything. You understand me? Yeah. So when I talk to you about a state of being that you have never experienced, you say, oh shit, what the hell is he talking about? Most of you cannot imagine a state of being in which you would never, ever, ever have to make a decision. From the slightest thing to the biggest thing, if there was the slightest need for a decision, if you were faced with more than one option, that's what a choice is, that's what a decision is, you would do nothing. You would sit and wait. Now, that is the meaning of faith, and that is the meaning of living in the booth. Some of you have never entered into the booth. You've always risen above the cloud, trying to establish your own rightness, concerned with whether you are right or not, and having no faith in the efficacy of the power of God. Therefore, you had to exercise or build up your own faith to try to accomplish your end objectives. Aren't you tired of that? This Feast of Tabernacles is the celebration of you entering in under that cloud and will never, ever, ever, ever again move when there is doubt. Now, that's a biggie. I can't tell you how important it is. For me, I can tell you that I spent 5 years alone doing nothing because I understood that. By any stretch of the imagination, I should not have spent 5 years alone. Everything in me, everything about me, everything, my personality style, all friends that I had, every religious person that I knew was exhorting me to go beyond that. Now, I promise you that you will not have to spend 5 years sitting still. Because we are a body, and now we are flesh of flesh and bone of bone, and that's not necessary again. I pray.
We're all baptized in the same
form. Yeah. But this, can you hear me what I'm saying? That it's time that you entered into this way of thinking? This is the place where faith is exercised. Can you see, if you have to make a choice, it can be no faith. It's impossible to have faith. You can talk about, well, I'm living by the faith of God. No, you're not. I don't care. And you can. That's why all this ridiculous shit about faith has become a commodity, has come into being, because people don't understand the subtlety of the guidance principle. Now go to Isaiah 14. Verse 11. Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials. The worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which did weaken the nations? For thou said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also on the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. That is what every member of the human race has done. They ascend above the cloud. They ascend above the cloud. They ascend above the cloud. God, because each one of us are the temple of God, made not with hands. There is no human construction in this temple. It is made without hands. The tabernacle in the wilderness was the type. Jesus was a fulfillment, and you're the antitype. The clouds are the two hemispheres of your brain. They are the cherubim, the male and the female. The guidance point, or the oracle of God, is the pineal body underneath the wings of the cherubim. You, the evil one, the Antichrist, has set himself up in this temple of God, and you've proclaimed yourself as God because you rise above the cloud night and day, because you think it is what God has intended for you to do. Actually, what it is, it's you trying to become like God by rising above the cloud. You've said in your heart, I will rise above. And God says, no, you won't. I want a people who operate by my guidance alone. And my guidance in them is unique. It's not in anywhere else. A people who will wait on me, instead of rising above, establishing their own rightness. I don't care what issue you're being confronted with, the smallest to the greatest. I don't care which moment of the day you're confronted with it. From this point forward, if you have to make a choice, you wait. I promise you, since once we begin to study this and you see it in its clarity, if you don't wait, your worst fears will come upon you. Am I communicating?
Yeah.
I can always be damned to make the wrong choice.
You cannot look to another man You cannot look to yourself. You can look nowhere for fulfillment except to the Holy One of Israel. And his method, the Holy Spirit's guidance in you, is that moment of the way it's manifested in you, is the moment, I mean, there's a moment there's no more choice. The moment is clear, and there's revelation. And I mean, I can't tell you how important this is. It's the smallest little details of your life, and the biggest, that you will not ascend above the clouds. Capisce? Now, this Feast of Tabernacles, the 7 days of the feast, they're going to build a booth out here. And every time you see it, it's a reminder that the 7 days of linear time are the days in which you live under the cloud, waiting, never again looking for fulfillment anywhere else but God, never again operating in a basis by which you rise above the clouds. Then on the eighth day, time ends. And you operate purely in freedom. In other words, there's no more cloud. The cloud is gone, it's burned, because you've entered the promise. The mystery of God is completed. Time is no more. There's only light. Okay? And we'll study this in 100 ways, hopefully, between now and the 28th.
Probably a good thing you didn't teach on this before you talked to Ed and Rick and buy that house.
You're going straight to hell.
That's hilarious.
Oh, Tyra.
I didn't know. So when you get there, you won't be surprised.
That's right.
And it's going to be about a minute.
That's right, we're due for it.
Okay. Now, what I want you to, there's a lot of, well, you won't read them anyway, never mind.
Did everybody come to dinner with?
Nobody.
No.
But I'm going to make my wonderful
stew. There you go, Brian.
Two stews.
You booked me up.
You got the stew.
I already got one. Kylene's sake, when you say take it big guy.
Take it big guy.
You can cook.